You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Am I the Are you singing RoboCop? I'm not sure.
nobody knows that theme, huh?
He's singing from a much better movie.
Oh,
it's just that it didn't sound like what I thought it was.
It's the only thing. It's a dun dun dun.
See, that sounds more like it.
But the dun dun. That's how it starts. Anyway,
okay.
Hi everybody, welcome to the OneOfUs.net review of Pacific Rim Uprising, Unleashed, Resurgence,
Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, I'm Matt.
I'm Mike.
Elliot.
And we have ourselves a little round table here. Surprisingly, not on the Gigantacast.
Although, yeah, amazingly enough.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's a mini episode.
This will probably get more traffic than my stupid show.
Don't sell yourself short.
I love that shirt. Like, you're wearing, Matt's wearing this 8-bit Pacific Rim shirt. It's like a fighting screen, and it's amazing.
It's 8-bit, yeah. I think I got this.
It's Godzilla versus Rim.
It's Godzilla versus Pacific Rim. I seriously was about to go down all the characters, yeah. But we don't have time.
Yeah.
Maybe we do. I don't know. But let's talk about this movie.
Yes. So, for those of you who don't know, who are you? And tell me what rock you've been living under, because I could use some peace and quiet for a little while. This is the sequel to 2013's Pacific Rim by Guillermo del Toro. A film that one would probably describe as a cult favorite?
Yeah, very much a cult favorite.
Very much so.
It's so much a cult favorite, it did what other cult favorites do. It had a sequel that at least you can say there was a sequel. I'm trying to be nice. Like,
you're getting a,
that's
you're
the
getting
nicest thing I've heard him say today.
Of our dissenting opinion here today.
I dissent.
I know you do.
Objection.
But let's, real quick, we'll hit the high points of the plot, I think.
Well, let's just talk about the plot right away. So it's years after the first one.
10 years.
Yeah.
It's 10 years?
Jeez.
Yeah, that's right, because they mentioned it as part of the plot. So after 10 years after...
The first 30 minutes is an exposition dump.
Yeah.
Like the first...
You know, totally not like the first movie.
No. But the first... that's actually the point, though.
Okay.
In the first 5 minutes... They literally reused scenes from the first movie.
That was a cost-cutting measure,
and
I
then,
could tell.
At that point, I knew I was in trouble. But keep on going.
I half expected it to use the Dragon Ball, like, last time on Dragon Ball
Z.
I wanted that song to play, the one from Super. I wanted to play it so bad. But, sorry. But, yeah, it's 10 years after they defeated the kaiju in the...
They
closed the breach. Everybody was all happy.
They canceled the apocalypse.
Yes, they canceled the apocalypse.
Or postponed it,
yeah, more
I guess.
Like delayed. Like canceled it for next Saturday.
They show that Idris Elba's son has now just been living...
That we totally knew about before now.
Yeah, exactly.
They wrote him in.
Somehow.
Yeah.
And he was extremely British. Well, that's his normal voice, actually.
And doesn't devalue the relationship he had with Michael Moore at all.
No.
Not at all.
But, but yeah, you find out that he's been living in the ruins of basically, like... L.A., I guess?
Yeah, it's not really
coast...
clear what... Is that Miami?
It's not really called being appealing to the international market.
it's a coast, like because he explains that not every coast city...
gets rebuilt.
Got rebuilt, unlike D.C.'s coast city.
So it's interesting if they explained it, but keep going.
Well, so after that, he finds himself having to go back into action, with quotes, to help... train a new series of cadets like Police Academy 4.
Not far off.
All it needed was a cadet that would go around going...
I feel like there was one, though.
Oh, yeah.
The Russian, like Police Academy.
I must break you, kaiju.
there's hints here and there to some of them are... some are blatantly said, some aren't, kind of thing.
Yeah.
As it progresses, you find out that the kaiju... not the kaiju per se, but the people that controlled the kaiju
the precursors.
They have a plan to destroy the planet involving some robots, but I don't want to go too far into it.
I mean, do we want to keep this relatively spoiler free starting out?
I think let's do the final thought up to final thought spoiler free, and then let's
Let's say
that's a good point.
Like at a certain point, we'll say here's the spoiler. So right. At that point, you can stop.
There is a plan, though. There's shenanigans going on.
Yes, there's a plan to eradicate the Saiyans. I couldn't help it.
Jesus,
that's the third Dragon Ball reference I've heard. Right?
All right, well, that's not one to
talk. It's like Toriyama over here.
Hey,
I've been really hyped since that teaser came out.
Okay,
but
okay.
Let's get past that. So. We'll go. I guess
is
we'll
that
go
Broly?
Around.
Is it Broly in the teaser?
Well, let's.
He's in the game trailer, but
we can talk about just.
But let's talk about our thoughts of everybody. So the first thing I have to say is that this is the most I've ever liked Scott Eastwood in anything in my entire life, because I didn't hate
What's
him.
He from?
He's from other terrible movies, such as that Texas Chainsaw
and Eastwood's
sequel.
Nutsack.
that last Fast and Furious movie.
Oh shit! Did he replace Paul Walker?
He's generic white guy stand-in number five.
He looks like a character Joe Madureira would have drawn in 1996.
Well, he's a really bad Clint Eastwood clone.
Well,
literally,
the thing that's off-putting is like he looks so much like Eastwood but can't act.
He can't act to save his life.
You watch him and you're like, I expect you to do better.
I thought he was okay.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's why he's the best I've ever seen him in, because he was just okay.
He was in Suicide Squad. I wouldn't know.
I don't watch crap. don't.
Anyone here, don't worry about it.
I thought John Boyega was fine in this.
Yeah, he was more of a comedian than an action star.
Which was fun. I mean, yeah. I thought he had, you know what I like? You know what I like? This is the, I won't go into it this much, but this movie was the best mainstream case for a bisexual polyamorous love triangle I've ever seen.
I would have been okay with that.
That's another thing.
Next to Book of Life.
They'll be drift compatible indeed.
Okay.
But there's nothing wrong with that. But again, they just sort of throw things out.
That's true.
And just sort of, it's like a Rorschach painting of a movie. It's like, we're going to put all this stuff on the screen. You take from it what you want.
Well, you guys explained it pretty well after the movie was done, is that this is a sequel series that is meshed into a 2-hour movie instead of over like 30 episodes.
And I know Elliot had a reaction to this when I said this after the movie, but I like the original movie. I like it a lot. Yeah. It's not one of my super favorite kaiju movies of all time, but I really like it. But the main problem I think it has, and this is something that detracts for me personally, but I know that this is the thing that a lot of people don't like about it. It is like a 20 episode, 30 episode anime series. It's trying to hit all these major emotional beats from a 20, 30 episode anime series, but it's trying to do it in 2 hours. And that is amplified in this movie because we have more characters,
more
plot points.
Yeah, you know, and I wanted to make sure I let you get that out. I was like, I really hated this movie, but I don't want to just not let people express themselves. I don't want to be that type of reviewer, but I see what you're saying, and I would have loved for a 30-episode Pacific Rim season one.
They were talking about doing that at one point.
That would be fucking amazing, but here's the difference. When you know you're facing that challenge, studios like Marvel, who gets a lot of shit from people who just need to, I feel like from people who need to fill column inches, and when they talk about when are they going down, like people who earn it and really fight with that difficulty of, hey, I have too much plot, how do I shrink this down? Do the work of figuring out the best ways to impart things. So, you know, Pacific Rim starts with a flashback, and we're going to give you that emotional pathos. Then we're going to give you more emotional pathos with Mako. We're going to try our best to reach it as far as we can.
Sure.
This one threw up its hands and said, come on, give us a break. And that's
interesting.
I just feel like this movie, it's hollow. You took something that to me, it's like my third favorite. It's my fourth favorite movie of all time.
Really? Like, I didn't know you thought so highly about it.
He loves Pacific Rim.
Loved this movie. Like, on a level, like, it's my...
I'll have to have you on Gigantacast so we can talk about this sometime.
No, it is profound to me how good the first movie is.
Well, like, it's refreshing.
I love the message and talking about grief and loss and getting back what you want. And this movie just sort of says, it's like it took the wrong lessons from the movie. It said, oh, giant robots! You liked the particle beam. You liked all. It didn't really figure out what worked about Pacific Rim.
Well, like me and Matt had a little more conversation about it. Like also about the whole sequel series thing is that I compared the first Pacific Rim to it's very serious. It takes its material seriously. The problem I've always had with it is that it gives you like a recap, but it feels like the ending of a long running series. It feels like Char's Counterattack, basically. Like I don't take your word for it. Yeah, because Char's Counterattack is the very end of Armor storyline kind of thing. So unless you already knew that kind of thing, I still like it kind of thing. But if you don't watch. If you don't really know what's going on, that's what it was. But this, exactly. And so this feels like what me and Matt, or Matt was the one who mentioned it. It's G Gundam. G Gundam, Mobile Fighter G Gundam is a ridiculous fucking anime, but I fucking love it. The best way to describe it is a Super Street Fighter Gundam, the Hyper Stereotype Edition, is the way I would explain that anime.
That's why it's my favorite Gundam.
They're not marketing it like that.
Well, that's the thing, is that I don't feel like even the first one marketed it.
No, but the first one
marketed it like that, though, compared to this one.
Earned its emotional beats.
I'm not saying it didn't. I'm not saying that.
This one has a robot fucking flipping people off.
Which is why I think it's like G-Gundam.
And then steps on an emotional climax with some stupid fucking song cue. Like, it steps on everything. And honestly, I have literally never done this at a screening. Literally. I've never done this at a movie.
Tell me.
I couldn't help. I just started booing. Like,
was that was you?
That was me. And Martin told me to stop. And I was like, you know, I shouldn't have. But I was so angry.
What exact point did you boo?
When the song came up, when they were launching the rockets, this is an emotional
thing. Oh, the fucking weird, song they were doing?
Yeah, and it's
that
just
was
like,
a little
I liked
off.
It.
And that's why I just had enough. I was like, let me get this straight. You took a piece of media that people put work and blood and sweat and tears into, and you just do incompetence and studio interference where you found the fucking leftover bits of the Transformers 5 script and put it into this movie, and you want me to, and then you don't have
savage.
You don't even have the wherewithal to even just let that emotional point stand on its own. Just no, we gotta fit a stupid ass little joke in there. Just to reiterate to you, this is the CW fucking version of Pacific Rim.
The thing is, I can't argue with anything that Elliot says, because that's the thing, is that it all depends on how you will take the movie.
I feel like I can just sit back and I can just watch the two of you like bounce back.
Probably,
because
the main thing is, me and him have the exact opposite reaction, essentially.
Because
the thing is, I'm willing to accept dumb shit, whereas he's not willing to accept that. Not because I don't fault him for it.
I feel like I kind of sit between the two of you, because I overall had fun and I enjoyed it, and I think the main reason I had fun with it was really because of those surface elements, because of the robots and the monsters, and the fact that I didn't hate the characters. Like, I thought the characters were, while super underdeveloped,
they were fine.
Every character was fine. And, I mean, I don't think I'm gonna, now, granted though, a lot of movies that tend to fall under my purview of big monsters breaking stuff, Jurassic World, are movies that I will then later revisit and then realize, I liked it because of this one thing, and I actually don't like this movie.
That's what happened with me in Jurassic World, yes.
Yeah, that's happened with me in Jurassic World.
That happened to me too. Like, I loved it when I first saw it.
Same.
I cooled on Godzilla 2014 after a while, because I do think that the opening of the movie is really good and the final battle is really good, there's a big chunk in the middle that doesn't. That feels really boring and truncated.
Yeah, with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. Yes.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, you're Captain McBoring. What is it? My wife calls him Brickman.
He is.
He's Brickman and Brickman. The Adventures of Brickman, Admiral McBad at my job, boring wife and boring child.
And it's like, hey, we're gonna have a Godzilla movie, but instead of showing you Godzilla, we're gonna show it on a TV screen in the movie theater.
But see, we're not talking about that. Yeah, we're not talking about that.
We've gone off course.
I have a whole thing about that we can get into. Yeah. But I actually like some of the little twists here. There's a big twist partway through the movie that I enjoy that twist a lot, actually. Oh, that's where they're going.
I think it was the smartest thing in the movie.
It was the smartest thing in the movie. I liked that twist because it's one of the only
things. I thought that thing was earned, honestly. Mm-hmm.
No, it was, but it was earned because it came from the first movie.
That's why I'm saying it's the only thing in the movie that was earned.
and it fit with the character, and it was well thought out, and it's like they gave up on making a good movie and they just wanted to make a crowd pleaser.
You know, I could sort of see that. I feel like that's a similar headspace that the Transformers movies try to occupy.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't put it in the same
No, it's not as bad
category.
As Transformers.
No.
No. But I expect Transformers to be bad.
Mm.
When I say...
You hold Pacific Rim to a different standard.
Pacific Rim was profound. Like, the end of Pacific...
It's so refreshing to talk to somebody who loves the shit out of that movie.
I like it a lot.
When she... When she gets the sword and she slices that monster in half, her entire arc comes full circle.
Right.
And you can see her exhale all of her guilt and survivor's remorse and just bad feelings from her entire life in that one action.
Right.
And that's because the filmmakers were craftspeople who did their job and earned that moment. And I expect that from this.
Well, let's talk about some of the people who helped make this movie with quotey fingers. So who directed this film?
This was directed by, I believe he was the guy from Daredevil, wasn't he?
Which Daredevil
was directed by Stephen S. DeKnight. And he was the...
Oh, God, he worked on Smallville.
Worked on Spartacus, Smallville.
So much.
Yeah. He worked on Buffy. And Angel.
He was reported to have joined the Transformers universe in the writer's room.
Oh, boy. He was a showrunner. Oh, he took over showrunner.
Oh, he was a showrunner after Drew Goddard left.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
He worked in the I knew I recognized Story Beats from Transformers.
The man,
I was like, oh, you have a small, scrappy robot where the badass women character is the one that made him? Tell me more.
Because the main thing about this movie is that the overlying plot of it feels like it's smartly designed, but it feels like that's what Guillermo came up with. But then he said, oh, I got to go, and then just threw it to somebody.
Yeah, strongest elements of this movie is stuff that's either left over from the previous film or built on from the previous film. Like, okay, real quick. I got to talk about the kaiju, because...
They're super unmemorable.
Yeah, I honestly can't really even remember that much about them. I literally, the only one I can remember is the action figure I'm holding here right now that you could... it's an audio, whatever. Raijin, and he's got this crazy, like faceplate thing. And it's a cool monster, but the kaiju feel like they're on screen... Okay, that is one thing that I will definitely say. Now I'm really nitpicky when it comes to kaiju battles and monster battles and battles in general. I used to write the battles for the Godzilla comics I worked on because there needs to be an ebb and flow to combat. You need to be able to track what's going on.
And you don't want your figures to feel like cardboard pieces just going around. It has to have weight.
Right. And I feel like that is a big piece of criticism. Now, again, it's not bad. I didn't think it was like... poorly handled. I just think that, again, you compare it back to the first movie, and that the battle in Hong Kong is so well done. It's
just carrying, like, dragging that boat behind him, and you can feel the fucking punches.
That's part of so
yeah.
cool.
and Itachi is such an interesting creature, the kind of the dragon monster that he's fighting in the city. And it's got all these powers and all these crazy abilities, and then it can fly. This movie didn't have a Battle of Hong Kong. I was expecting... Oh, yeah. And there were bad Jaegers in this.
Yes. Well, that's the thing is I didn't want to, like... I wasn't sure what I could say spoiler-wise. But I realized that bad Jaegers... I figured that... I just realized, that bad Jaegers themselves isn't necessarily a spoiler. But what it is that... I guess further into the plot is that the... some Jaegers are taken over, and so they have to be... fought to the death with
there's,
a normal
they're
Jaeger.
Bad Jaegers. That's all you really have to say.
Yeah, that really is what it is. But even then, we kind of knew what the small part of the twist was, I guess. Because that was the thing, was when they first announced the sequel, the first thing Guillermo said that he wanted to do was he wanted to have
kaiju merged
with the Jaeger. They do here. And I thought it was pretty kind of cool, actually. Those were the more memorable parts of it.
But that feels like an arc of a series.
That's the thing.
They kind of abandoned after a certain point.
Well, and here's the thing. It's something that you can definitely do. And I thought it was... The way they executed on it in terms of just the visual, that was damn cool.
I thought it was badass as hell.
And I can get with that. But again, they had the seed of a good idea from Del Toro.
Right.
And they did not respect that material and respect what Del Toro produced to give it to somebody who could really take it and run with it. And if you want to take it away from his direction, I get that. That's your shit now.
Right. But, Del Toro did give DeKnight full... He told him, this is your thing. Yeah. Do with what you will. Which, I'm going to go make a fish fucking movie.
I'm going to win an Oscar.
But he didn't know what he had. And he just thought, okay, I got a job to do. But he didn't care. I don't think
you really. Feel
I don't
like
think
he didn't care.
Honestly, I'm actually with Elliot on this one. I felt like they didn't actually care so much as the guy. The reason they got the guy is because he probably helped make Transformers movies. And they're like, well, somebody in the studio probably looked at this and went, well, people want more robots fighting each other kind of thing. They want more of the robots, they want more of the kaiju. And they probably asked them to do that. And it probably got to the point where certain people on this film just didn't give a fuck. Hmm. But that's the reason certain dumb things can happen in movies like that.
It definitely lacked the passion project feel of the first movie because this felt like a disposable quickie sequel, which is so funny considering that it's been, what, how many
years? 5 years.
It's been like 5 years.
And I look at this as like a this as I was watching one of the battles where they're just indiscriminately just destroying a city.
Yeah,
not even caring. I felt like I was watching a direct-to-DVD sequel.
Yeah, that was the thing that kind of bothered me that I remember.
I kept looking
moment?
At Matt, and every time the building was destroyed, he'd look like a little part of him died.
Well, because, like, that was the thing that I appreciated about the first movie. There's a little moment in the first movie that I think speaks to the broader whole of it, where Gypsy Danger steps over the bridge.
Yes! Exactly.
As opposed to this
just
movie,
stepping through it.
Where they're just like, what, didn't Saber Athena drag its swords through a couple of buildings for no good goddamn reason?
Just to stop them.
The main thing
not put it in the ground, but put it in the fucking building.
The reason I was okay with that is because this is Police Academy 4. Is that all of the pilots weren't all that, like, you know, well trained essentially. So it was something I could forgive.
Let us talk about the pilots. I think those actors did a fine job.
Yeah, I was going to say I really appreciated Kylie Spaney, I think is her name, as Amara.
I liked Amara.
I liked her. I kind of wanted
she had the
to
most
about
character
her.
Development.
And that's the thing. If you want to make a movie about a scrappy Jaeger developer, make that movie. It's like an Earth to Echo Me Specific Rim. I'm with it.
Earth to Echo.
Hey,
sorry. God. I just
tell me I'm wrong.
No, I know. I
didn't see it.
I didn't see it. So it's just a man deep cut. But no, go ahead.
But it's like if you want to do that, that's great. But you're changing the tone so drastically when you had Raleigh Beckett and Michael Morey, two people who were fucking just grizzled and war weary.
Right.
And now you got hey guys. Can I fight the Jaegers? This is going to be great. Oh, my God.
I feel like they could have pulled that off had this movie been about her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, let's be clear about something. They wanted John Boyega because he's from Star Wars.
Of course.
And
I mean, he basically plays Finn.
It definitely does undermine. It undermines, like you said, it undermines the relationship between Mako and Stacker. And that's the other thing. Now, I think Rinko Kikuchi is a super underappreciated actress.
Oh, I agree.
I've seen her in a couple of different things. Yeah. She hasn't necessarily been in a lot of good material. I saw her in, Kuniko the Treasure Hunter or something? Kuniko the Treasure Hunter.
Yeah.
Didn't like that movie.
That movie was good, but it was, it was rough.
It has a weird ending, but we're not talking about that. But my point is that she's really good, though.
Yeah.
She's wasted in
violently film. Underutilized in this, and I was honestly mad.
No, I was angry too. It was insulting. And like but one problem this movie shares with and I love Pacific Rim, but there's a problem in Pacific Rim that that it shares with its sequel.
Sure.
It's about the wrong character. Pacific Rim obviously was
Charlie Hunnam
about,
is the weakest part of the first movie, without a doubt.
Pacific it doesn't
Rim
exist
was
in this one by
about
the way.
Michael Morey. This should have been about
what happened to Raleigh? Where'd he go?
He's like,
disappeared.
I make King Arthur guys. I don't have
No, he ran off to go, he ran off to join a biker gang.
Yeah. I was telling Matt, he probably just has super mega cancer.
But yeah, everybody gets super mega nose cancer.
Why don't we move to final thoughts and then we can do a little spoiler?
We're going to use final thoughts first.
That's the best way of doing it.
That with my words that I use?
That way they can cut off afterwards.
Okay, well, I'm going to save you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'll go first. I didn't necessarily think this definitely is not on the caliber of the first movie, and I think a lot of people are going to... Well, the thing is, there's a lot of people... speaking for the kaiju fandom, there's a lot of people who like Pacific Rim. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who really don't like it. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people are going to hate this. Mm-hmm. Personally, I thought it was perfectly disposable, enjoyable entertainment. It was light. It had some fun stuff in it. The characters are fine. It had some twists, and that was fine. It kind of kept surprising me, but overall, though, it's not. if you really do hold Pacific Rim really close to the chest, yeah, it's probably not going to be for you. You're probably going to be disappointed by it. I still recommend it. I recommend taking your kids to see this, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely take... I really want to take my nephews to go see this weekend.
It's
so,
made for that age. It's made for 12.
Absolutely. I think kids are going to love this. I would give it... I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 sweet kaiju tats, bro.
So I think out of the three of us, I like the movie the most. Because the thing is that at the end of the day, this movie is very much... what are you willing to accept kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I've, for some reason, have always been willing to accept some weird shit, and I don't know why.
Like, the anime fan.
We like Japanese stuff, man. I mean, come
on. Yeah, that's
here.
True. Ironically enough, I don't like Dragon Ball GT, though. But the thing is that this this movie is
fucking does.
I do. Yeah. So the main thing about this movie is that the movie is just... it really is just the G Gundam to the Mobile Suit Gundam that the first movie is.
Because
Okay, the best way is...
translate.
Yeah, I was going through, though, because the thing is that the original Mobile Suit Gundam is about war. It's about the consequence of war and the fact that war is not fun.
It's the Power Rangers Turbo to the Power Rangers in space.
People will get that reference.
Yeah.
I got it. But no, the main thing about the original Gundam is that it's about war, it's about loss, it's about death, and it's about how fucked up war is. And that's kind of how Pacific Rim is. Pacific Rim is it takes its stuff very seriously. It talks about loss, it talks about death.
Even though
it is
fairly silly at the same
time.
That's the thing about Gundam itself, is that it's the same way. Because it's at the end of the day, it's a show about teenagers piloting giant robots.
Right.
Somebody's going to get slapped to pilot that giant robot.
But get in the robot, Shinji!
G Gundam is...
get in your mom, Shinji!
Shinji.
That's a reference. But G Gundam is the dumb one. G Gundam is the one where there's a Gundam from Mexico that's called Tequila Gundam.
Yes! Got, I love
and
Tequila
it has,
Gundam!
And it has a sombrero on. And so that's the thing. It's dumb as hell, but it's fun.
Oh,
it's fun.
I love that
that's
one
the thing.
So much.
That's what
Zebra
the
Gundam
is. Exactly. There's a windmill Gundam, for Christ's sake.
Windmill Gundam.
We chose the right crew for this.
Yes. So that's true. But the thing is that this is the G Gundam of Pacific Rim.
Not as good
you
as
know,
G Gundam though.
Here in that context, I get why you like it now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is that I enjoyed this film much more than I probably should have. But the thing is that you might too if you are willing to accept something. To dumb down your expectations compared to what the first one does. Which I'm not saying is a good thing, but I'm not saying it's a bad thing either. Because at the end of the day, I specifically would give this movie 7.5 out of 10 mobile suit cameos.
Yeah, very nice.
I've said a lot on this review.
This is really your show, man.
Sorry about that.
No,
it's all right. It's fine. It's fine.
As everybody knows, I'm just going to say one last time. I emphatically love the first Pacific Rim.
Cool.
It has silly shit in it. I agree. But I can see what they're aiming for, and the emotional beats really hit me the right way. This one, to me, feels hollow.
Hmm.
It felt like they got a property and tried to make a quick cash grab on it. And on top of that, the production design is not that good.
Mm.
Everything just feels light.
You didn't like the foam rubber padding on the Jaeger pilot suits?
Yeah. It just feels like they took
that Starship Troopers era combat gear for you.
Yeah, like they took a little bit of Transformers 5 because the guy who worked on it was in that writer's room. They took a little bit of Power Rangers with the suits and the setting, and they said, "Oh, we gotta let's set it in Japan partially too, so that we can get some nerd points."
I don't mind that.
No, but that's by design.
Sure.
Like, and so it's just very disingenuous. But even then, it was a competently made movie. The film never shut off.
The reel didn't break partway through. It didn't give me syphilis.
Like, so for that, I got to give it at least a 3.
Ooh.
3 Damn. Horrible Jaegers out of 10.
Horrible Jaegers.
And I'm docking at a point for just insulting the memory of Pacific Rim.
Okay, so we've given our thing. We're
going
to go in the spoilers. I swear to God, if you don't turn this off and you want to see this movie... shame on you. But
but we can also save you some money, too.
But to Elliot, you'll save some money. But the first thing I'm going to say is a major spoyer, but it happens pretty early on.
All right, tell us.
And it's specifically something that Elliot, I know, is going to want to talk about. It's Michael's death.
It's so fucking unnecessary.
Yeah, that was... Okay, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy here. But it feels like...
they want to market to the Chinese market?
We gotta market it to China. We're going to get this same Chinese chick who's in goddamn everything now. Yeah. Which she's a fine actress.
She's in Iron Man 3 though. I just realized.
But we're gonna
that.
Destroy Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm reading too much into it, but it did feel like we swapped out one Asian.
No, they totally did.
One Asian protagonist for another, and
but because they're Asian, we're not gonna quite give them the spotlight they need. Just enough to not get in trouble.
The main thing is that her death is just completely out of nowhere.
It's completely useless to
the
plot.
It's very useless to the plot. It's for an emotional beat for a character we don't know very
well.
And he doesn't...
Man, I mean, considering this character, considering Mako is I think, from what I know and what I've seen around...
This should have just been a Gigantic-ass episode.
She's a... It's all right. She's a... beloved character.
She's the heart of the series.
People started calling her. People started calling it the Mako Mori test instead of the Bechdel test.
Wow!
Like she's important to a lot of people, and she has almost no role in this.
They just discard her.
She gets
I was so mad.
She gets taken out, and it feels like Jake Pentecost. I feel like he doesn't really give a shit. Like, he's like,
I didn't see that.
Sister that I never really got to talk to or was mentioned in the last movie because it was more about her and my dad, but I'm totally here, too, and I don't know. I docked major points.
That was the one thing that I actually thought that character development-wise that he got, because that stuck with him all the way till when he destroys that other mobile suit.
No, but it's
I keep saying
mobile suit.
Jaeger, sorry.
But it's just that... If you're going to kill a character like that with that statue from the first movie, you better make it worth the... You better advance the plot in a meaningful way. It better advance the character's arc. It better do something more fundamental to the plot. What it does is if you weren't going to use that character right, just leave her out the movie. Just say she retired. Like, just have her make a cameo and just don't go play around in somebody else's playground and play with their toys.
Waterfalls.
Yeah. And just like and just smash him up. He's a fucking tourist. Like, and now the canon is that this fucking hero, one of the best characters,
she saved the goddamn world,
is just dead in a fucking
she died sending a tweet.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I will bet you money, and I'm not going to say one way or the other I don't really know if I have the right to say how I view it in terms of this. I will bet you money that there's going to be an article rightly, in my opinion, saying that this is a little sexist.
She got fridged?
Yeah.
Oh, she absolutely did.
Yeah. And it's just like, you took a very strong female character and just pushed her to
the side. An iconic character.
A good way of explaining why that's so bad, even for me, is that on the polar opposite side is what happens with Charlie Day's character. Is that Charlie Day's character gets an arc that makes 100% sense.
That was probably one of the best aspects of the film, was that he... turns out has been in, which is something a lot of fans have been theorizing for a while, is that he's been infected by the precursors.
Mm.
And he's the villain of the movie, which I thought was really creative.
I was really happy
with
that.
And he sells it really well.
Well, Charlie Day is an amazing actor. We don't give him enough credit for a lot of things. Like, there's an interview with the guy who plays Mac on It's Always Sunny, and they're like, what do you think about the fact he gets to do all these movies? He's like, I'm just glad that everyone else realizes just how fucking talented that we know he was.
I mean, he basically is playing his character from Always Sunny when he's into conspiracy mode.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But that's why...
Pepe Sylvia! Pepe Kaiju!
But the main thing is that his relationship with Gottlieb, played by Baron Gorman, is also really well done too, because it's the other part of the first movie that is used pretty well in the sequel.
He really comes into his own, because I feel like he got a little overshadowed by Newt in the first movie, and in this one I feel like he gets to do a little more. He gets to have a little bit more of a spotlight. He's not as eccentric a character. Yeah. But what is funny is my buddies over at Toho Kingdom interviewed Gorman recently, and apparently he is super stoked for the new Godzilla movies. He's apparently a Godzilla fan, so I'm
super happy about that. Yeah,
full points for that. But those two characters I thought were handled pretty well. There's this list of these side characters who are.
It just felt like they were ticking boxes. Like, it felt like
Asian Captain, guy, Russian
yeah,
person.
It felt like I was watching Captain Planet.
Indian guy.
It was like, I'm not kidding. It felt like a movie that was made by a focus group.
I know, I'm just laughing because it's funny.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're going to have these groups. And I'm all for representation, But you have to make it mean something within the story.
Well, you have to make them... It would be nice to make them into characters.
And not caricatures.
Right. And, okay, here's the thing. And I know some people are going to be saying, oh, well, but the, this is my Pacific Rim hater voice. Right. Well, but the, this movie... in the previous movie, some people will say that, well, the Russians and the Chinese and the whatever in the previous movie, they didn't mean anything. Yeah, but you remember them because
they're super memorable.
They have presence.
The Jaegers are memorable. Everything.
Yeah,
has
that's the thing about
them.
The Jaegers in this movie. The Jaegers were kind of all this generic.
Well,
kind
if,
of the
if
same.
You can tell the budget was turned down because mm-hmm. when Gypsy Danger in the first movie moved, you could almost feel every strut.
She felt heavy.
Yeah. Whereas this one, it just feels like they didn't have the money to really animate and render everything that they needed to render for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like every... Instead of it feeling like there's a bunch of different pieces all straining against each other and all these hydraulics working, this felt like one just robot.
Well...
Didn't really have to work that hard to move.
And this was something that Mike and I were talking about at the end of the movie as the credits were rolling. Now, I prefer my monsters to be guys in suits and my buildings to be miniature, but, and I felt, although when I saw the original Pacific Rim, I felt that that movie really did sell the idea of CGI applied to giant robots and giant monsters,
yeah.
because you felt the weight of them, you felt the scale of them, and that's quite frankly not something you can really get with guys in suits and miniatures. You can sometimes, but it's really tricky.
Yeah.
Now... With this movie, they might as well have just been guys in suits because there was no
there was no consequence. They had this one scene in the climax with Tokyo where like there's this underground bunker that just goes down super fast and
yeah.
like, everybody's been evacuated. This is not Tokyo.
15
1.
People just died.
This is not Evangelion. They're not underground. You just killed everybody. But I think we probably need to.
Yeah,
we probably need to.
I mean, I could probably, like you said.
We could go on for all night.
We could. I'll have to reassemble this council for a gigantic cast online.
Because the main thing is that at the end of the day, if you're going to watch this movie, just understand that you may have a different take than your friend.
Yeah. just to echo, if you're going to watch this movie, just please come into it. Knowing it's not the first movie.
It's not the first
movie.
It is a disposable Saturday morning cartoon. It's another episode of Power Rangers and not one of the higher tier ones.
Yeah, this is like Power Rangers Wild Force.
It's not so bad.
I'm not touching that one.